You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. And it's time to go back to the phone line for the Ohio Business Machine. Hotline OBM, Ohio Business Machine's preferred copier provider, the Cleveland Browns. You know that every day is game day in your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com today. And we bring in our favorite, Dane Brugler, NFL draft expert from CBSSports.com and NFLDraftScout.com. What's up, Dane?
Hey, guys. How are we doing on this Friday?
Doing very, very well. Before we get into some of the guys that are still in college, we kicked our show off. Today's first time we've had him on CBD with Sean Coleman and Hugh Jackson talking about his big tackle out of Auburn, that this is a guy that's going to get more playing time and eventually take over for this team at right tackle. Coming out, some people thought he'd be a second rounder, ended up going in the third round to the Browns from that spread offense at Auburn. What was your scouting report on Sean Coleman, and where can he win here in the NFL?
Yeah, I had him as a late two, early third round player. So I think he went about the range I thought he would. And, you know, I think people hear me say this a lot, but the most fascinating aspect of scouting is discovering the journey of each of these players. You know, what is their background? What helped shape them to who they are now as a player, as a person? You know, what helped them get to this point? And Coleman, a great example of that. And I think most people know his story. The past battle with leukemia, that obviously sidelined his development in college. He's a five-star guy out of high school, so you know talent was never an issue. And so for him to endure 30 months of chemo treatment, to beat cancer, then return to football, I mean, quite the story. And I think he's still reintroducing himself to the game in several respects. You know, he started at left tackle the past two seasons at Auburn, consistently one of the SEC's most steady blockers at 6'5 and a half, 307 pounds, certainly looks the part. A balanced big man, long arms, strong hands. He has the movement skills that you want. But again, after missing so much time, development time in college, he's just raw in areas. And so you see him bend too much at the waist. You see him not properly using angles. And so for a guy like this, it's just going to take some time. But I do think the talent is there for him to develop into a starting caliber tackle in this league. He just needs development time.
Dane, one of the things we talked about on the show this week, and you know, you can see it around the league, offensive line play seems to be down, quarterback play seems to be down. As someone who studies these guys day in and day out, you know, do you think the spread offenses and the simplistic concepts that they're running in college are one of the main culprits?
Yeah, that definitely goes into it. You look at what college offenses ask their linemen to do, and it's not like it's the college head coach's fault. You know, they're paid to win games, not necessarily, develop guys for the next level. I mean, that's obviously part of it, but I definitely think that the simplistic design of offensive schemes and what they're asked to do, and that's why we see certain offensive linemen from schools like Stanford and some of these other schools, get bumped up a little more than by scouts than some other teams. But I think it really goes back to high school. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of guys, they know where the money is. When you're built, when you're 6'4", 6'5", you're pushing 300 pounds, they know where the money is, and that's on the defensive line. And so I think we're seeing a lot of the top athletes, instead of saying, I want to be a left tackle, I want to be a center, they want to be a pass rusher. They want to be on the other side where, you know, they can get the Ndamukong Suh type of money. You know, they can get these big contracts. And so I think that starts early in high school and then into college. And so I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing offensive line play so down across college and the NFL. I think we're going to see it this year. Offensive line is, in my opinion, going to be one of the weaker positions in the 2017 NFL draft, while defensive line is going to be one of the strongest.
Sure. And Dane, as we dive into the Browns-Jets matchup, I want to ask you a question about some guys in the Big Ten that have, you know, just recently last year come out and now play for the Jets. Two of them are Buckeyes. Darren Lee, just talk about the flexibility and the athleticism of a guy like Lee. And then how big of a mistake was it for you for Jalen Marshall to come out this year? And had he had another productive year at Ohio State, where would you have projected him next year's draft based around the talent at wide receiver?
Yeah, and with Jalen Marshall, it was kind of a case of you know, why are you making this decision? And he was a guy in high school who was a quarterback, and he goes to Ohio State and never truly had a position. You know, he returned punts. He was a little bit of a slot receiver, played on the outside some. And so without a true identity, you know, what are scouts supposed to think about, you know, a redshirt sophomore who's passing up 2 years of eligibility to go pro? And so
right.
I thought he'd get drafted maybe late. He didn't. He went undrafted. But to his credit, he was able to catch on. And, you know, he's proving that, you know, he can play in this league. But at the same time, you know, once you get to the NFL, they're not going to give you a lot of time to develop. I mean, they want to, when you come out of college, you're supposed to already be at a certain development point.
Right.
And so that's why we don't see a lot of redshirt sophomores come out. And so Jalen Marshall, hopefully he can stick in this league. He probably should have returned to school. We'll see how that plays out. But Darren Lee, you know, obviously the more well-known player, a first-round player. And when you're built you know, at 6'1", 230 pounds, and you run in the mid-4.4s, and you fly all over the field, you have that above-average range. His ability to unlock his hips and just instantly accelerate, it just looks like a runaway train out there. And he was such an instrumental part of the Ohio State defense the last 2 years. The national title team, played mostly at Sam, taking over for Ryan Shazier. Just a very hungry competitor. He plays like it on and off the field. So his attacking mindset really fits today's NFL. So I was not surprised to see him go as high as he did, and it's not surprising to see him have success early because he is an above-average athlete in an NFL defense that really preaches that attacking mindset, which is what Darren Lee does best.
Sure, and another very interesting name that was in the Big Ten, drafted by the New York Jets, and maybe it was a surprise to us based on where he was drafted, both the location and where, but Christian Hackenberg, you know, kind of like no identity at Penn State because of the allegations and the coaching change. Where did you have him falling? And is this a good fit for him in New York?
It's so tough to say with Hackenberg because he was such an enigma coming out of college, because you see, you watch his highlight tape and you see just these power throws that, oh my gosh, this is an NFL player. But then you watch, you know, full game tapes and see the inconsistency, just not recognizing open receivers downfield, not reading defenses, not feeling the pass rush. There's so many things that go into playing the quarterback position, obviously, more so than just looking the part and having a big-time arm. And right now, that's what Christian Hackenberg is. I gave him a fourth-round grade coming out. I thought, you know, at some point early on day three, you want to take a chance on a quarterback. Maybe Hackenberg can be that guy to stash as your number three. Let him come along. Who knows where he'll be in 3 years after some NFL coaching. But the Jets pulled the trigger in the mid-second round. And so he shouldn't see the field this year. And you could say that maybe he shouldn't see the field next year. He's that raw as a passer. He just needs time. And will the touch, the placement, the decision-making, will – you know, those are three critical areas of playing the position. Will he ever develop a firm grasp on those? Maybe, but we haven't seen it to this point. And so that's a very concerning thing with quarterback prospect. You know, he really is an enigma. And so it'll be interesting to track his development the next 2 years.
All right, let's talk about a guy who wants to be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. He said it. Mel Kiper just made him the top quarterback on his draft board. Mitch Trubisky, what do you think of this young man from North Carolina that seems to be, at least for me, kind of Wentzian in his rise right now at the quarterback position?
Yeah, and as the season goes on, I'm hearing from more and more scouts who are really excited about Mitch Trubisky and what he can be at the next level. You know, as they you go through Chapel Hill and they watch tape on this guy, for a lot of them, he's passed Deshaun Watson as a top quarterback prospect from the ACC this year because he has a skill set that's made for the NFL. You know, he's solidly built, 6'3", 225 pounds. He's an above-average athlete. You know, his mobility is one area where I don't think he receives enough credit. You see the efficient footwork in the pocket, his ability to shuffle, slide, avoid pressure with a quick reset while keeping his eyes downfield. Great arm. He can throw the full route tree, smooth delivery. The decision-making is there, doesn't force throws. He's completing 71% of his passes, and that's a little deceiving, watching that UNC up-tempo offense. A lot of throws within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, so I think that boosts that completion percentage number a little bit. But with that said, you also see on tape him making plenty of downfield throws as well. That shows the accuracy. It shows arm strength, shows touch. So I think nationally, a lot of people haven't heard Mitch Trubisky's name prior to this season, and I think they're a little hesitant to buy into him this early. But I know he's not a secret to plenty of people in Northeast Ohio who watch him play high school football. And you know what? Obviously, when you're drafting a quarterback, you ideally want a full resume. You know, you want a multi-year starter, and that's something that Trubisky won't have if he decides to go pro after this season. You know, he only has 8 starts under his belt right now. Obviously a fairly small sample size, but again, it's an impressive sample size. And so based on what we've seen thus far, if he continues to develop at this current pace and finish as strong, he's going to have a tough decision to make after the year. Whether or not to take advantage of his productive season, if viewed as not a strong quarterback group, he could come in or come out and be the top quarterback this year. But regardless, if we're talking about the top quarterbacks in this draft, Trubisky needs to be in that conversation.
So right now, first of all, how big is Mitch Trubisky?
6'3", 225 pounds.
Okay. Number two, is he still behind Kaiser for you?
For me right now, I think they're both kind of similar in that top tier in this class. They're both very toolsy. Kaiser has obviously struggled as of late, and this is going to be a big test for Kaiser this weekend. Notre Dame's coming off a bye week, so he's kind of had a chance to step back, take a deep breath, recollect himself. And so we'll see how Notre Dame and Kaiser specifically, how they respond against Miami this weekend, an afternoon game tomorrow afternoon. So really eager to see Kaiser, how he responds, because him and Trubisky, to me, they're right there neck and neck. We'll see who finishes with maybe a stronger performance down the stretch.
Are they on your big board right now? Are they top 10, top 5, top 15, top 20? Where do you kind of see the quarterbacks right now?
I think they're both, I don't really do an official big board yet because there's still so much we're figuring out. But if I were to do one, I think they'd both be somewhere in that 5 to 15 range. I don't think they're, I think we have Miles Garrett, Jonathan Allen, Malik McDowell, those type of guys in the top 5, and then Mitch Trubisky, Kaiser, guys that you project as future starters, guys that could potentially lead you to the playoffs, and I think both Trubisky and Kaiser fall into that category.
Okay.
I think they're both maybe in that 5 to 15 range at this point.
And Dane, I know you don't have a big board, but you probably have a great understanding of the top 25 prospects. Who's been the biggest riser and the biggest faller as of the last couple weeks of college football?
I think when you look at
Trubisky could be one. Right.
Well, yeah, exactly. You look at the quarterback position, and we just talked about a few, and Deshaun Watson. He really hasn't played up to the level you expected. I think he entered the year as the clear-cut favorite for the Heisman, as the favorite to be the top quarterback drafted. What we saw him do against Alabama in a national title game, over 400 yards passing, 4 touchdowns. We saw he's not just an athlete out there. We saw him be a passer against arguably the best defense in the country on the biggest stage. So he carried a lot of momentum into the offseason. And then this year, he had kind of an average September. I really liked what he did down the stretch against Louisville in the fourth quarter to win that game. So he deserves credit for that. But he just hasn't played like a top five quarterback this year to this point. And so Clemson has a big game Saturday night in Tallahassee. Deshaun Watson has done well against Florida State. And you look at that Seminoles defense, and they're in the bottom half of the FBS in pass defense and scoring defense. And so Deshaun Watson should have a big game Saturday night against Florida State. And obviously Clemson needs to win that game to remain as one of the final four favorites to end up in the playoffs. So Deshaun Watson, all eyes will be on him this Saturday. He's a guy that's really kind of not helped himself. And then a guy who has helped himself, let's stay with the quarterback position, Davis Webb from Cal. Jared Goff last year, we saw what he did in that offense. Davis Webb's putting up consistently similar numbers, taking advantage of that air raid offense. Another offense where you see a lot of one reads, you see a lot of throws within 5 to 7 yards of the line of scrimmage. But when he goes deep, you just see beautiful touch on the ball. You see arm strength. You see velocity. You know, he's a good-sized kid at 6'3 and a half, 227 pounds. And he's a good athlete. He moves around out there. Coaches have told me how smart he is. So, you know, even though he comes from that offense, we saw Jared Goff go number one. And I think Davis Webb, if you don't get that quarterback early and maybe you want to get a quarterback somewhere in the second, third, fourth round, wherever he ends up, Davis Webb would make a lot of sense.
I got a question from one of our listeners. Paul Meyer says, what about the quarterback Cooper from Central Michigan?
Yeah, and, you know, you look at seniors this year, and Chad Kelly's out there, C.J. Beathard from Iowa. But Cooper Rush, the guy that scouts really like, and you know, and he's a gamer. He stands in the pocket. He's tough. He has a decent arm. He's really, really sharp, really smart. And I think that's what's going to, when coaches and scouts get him on the whiteboard during the draft process, when they bring him in for visits, that's where he's really going to help himself. He's a pro-style guy. You know, he plays in an offense at Central Michigan where he's consistently under center. And he's has the experience that you want. He has the active NCAA leader in passing yards. And that's all the good part. Now, with the parts you worry about is he's not a very good athlete. He doesn't really look comfortable moving around in the pocket. The ball placement can go up and down. The arm strength is good, but it's not great. It's not an ideal from a velocity standpoint. So there's a lot to like about Cooper Rush, and I think, you know, depending on how he does, I'd like to see him at a Senior Bowl, how he does in that type of setting against other top quarterbacks. But I think when you're talking about the top five senior quarterbacks, I think he's squarely right there in that conversation to be a mid-round pick.
All right, Washington at Utah, game that a lot of scouts will be watching. What should viewers be watching in that one?
Yeah, this is probably the top game of the weekend. You know, and this is a chance for a lot of East Coast people to watch two really good Pac-12 teams in the afternoon because it is a 3:30 game. You know, the underclassmen, Washington has, you know, Jake Browning at quarterback. I think he might be the best candidate to upset Lamar Jackson as a Heisman guy this year. We'll see what he can do against Utah's tough defense. For Washington, though, check out John Ross, wide receiver number one. Kind of that DeSean Jackson type of mold. Okay. He has easy speed. I mean, it just the acceleration is phenomenal. He can create his own space in his routes. His plant and burst in and out of his breaks are outstanding. You know, we saw Will Fuller from Notre Dame go high, top 25 of last year's draft just because of that pure speed, the ability to stretch out a defense. John Ross can do that as well, except I think he has better ball skills than Will Fuller. So John Ross, I think he's only a junior, but if he comes out, could be somewhere in that late, mid to late first round discussion. And in Utah, they've got a really good offensive line, really good ground game. We saw Joe Williams last week against UCLA set a new school record. We'll see what he can do against a much better run defense for Washington. You look at the secondary for the Huskies, Sidney Jones at corner. That's a player that I've mocked to the Cowboys, to the Browns in some of my mock drafts.
And those Washington corners are usually good. Marcus Peters,
Marcus Peters, exactly. They've got a little track record of producing those guys. And Sidney Jones is going to be the latest one. Tall, rangy corner, very good ball skills, aggressive. I think he's a guy to watch. And then also Buda Baker, the safety. A couple of juniors there in that secondary for Browns fans to watch.
All right, Dane, final one for you. We appreciate the time. Obviously, I know you got to get ready for a little Tribe action tonight in the World Series, but is it still Myles Garrett and everybody else in this draft?
Oh, there's no question. And, you know, watching that Alabama game last week, Myles Garrett's clearly not 100%. You know, he was really banged up with that lower leg injury from the Arkansas game a few weeks ago. Clearly not 100%, but still, Myles Garrett at 75-80% is still much better than most defensive players out there. And he still had a productive game against Alabama. You saw the pass rush. You saw the quickness, ability to beat blocks. You saw the recognition, sniffing out screens, blowing up plays in the backfield. And for Alabama, you know, the respect that they showed Myles Garrett consistently running away from his side of the field, I mean, that says it all. So, yeah, Myles Garrett, clearly, as long as, you know, the injury is not anything long-term or, you know, no off-field issues come up, Myles Garrett, clearly the number one player in this upcoming draft.
All right, Dane, we appreciate the time. As always, we'll talk with you next week. Enjoy the games on Sunday.
All right, you too. Thanks, guys.
All right, great. Dane Brugler, follow him on Twitter, seriously, at DP Brugler. Give him a follow. He will give you an edubication. You can also get him at CBSSports.com, NFLDraftScout.com. When we come back, we'll get with the voice of the Jets to break down this game. Also talk a little college football with us here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Back we go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline here. And we are very happy to get the preview for you of the New York Jets, 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 Jets. And it's about that time. Browns, Jets, they did in week one of last year. And they will do it again on Sunday at First Inter Stadium. And to preview the Jets, we bring in the voice of the Jets, Bob with shoes in. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, 2-5. The Jets probably not where they want to be. We know the Browns 0-7 are not where they want to be. It's been a turbulent season, to say the least, for Ryan Fitzpatrick. What is the state of this Jets team and specifically their quarterback?
Well, I mean, obviously the quarterback was not happy with the decision that was made last week to bench him, but it only lasted about a quarter, and now he's got the job back. And the way that they're approaching this with him is, I think, the theme for their season. At some point, could he be replaced? Sure, he could be replaced. But by the time he gets replaced again, it would be the season's over. We're not making the playoffs, so let's see what either Bryce Petty or Christian Hackenberg has, because we have to see what we have for the future. But they're a long way away from saying that, because they play the Browns, they play the Dolphins, they play the Rams the next 3 weeks, and if they win those three games, they get to 5-5. And they have every reason to believe that they're still in a wild card chase. And as unrealistic as that might be for fans and for media to say, that's certainly the way they have to approach it. You can't be a coach and at 2-5 walk into the locker room and look guys like Brandon Marshall and Darrell Revis and David Harris and players that have been in the league for 7, 8, 10 years and say, hey, guys, you know what? I know you guys are all on the tail end of your career, kind of on the other side of the mountain, but we're pitching it this year. We're going to see what we've got for the future. You know, the only way to sell in the locker room at 2-5 to veteran players is to tell them, hey, let's go win games. And
sure.
Ryan Fitzpatrick certainly gives you the best chance to do that. So that's the pitch they're making to their veterans, but all of that is predicated upon certainly winning Sunday and then going from there.
Absolutely, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems as if, you know, 12 touchdowns for Decker last year, Brandon Marshall 14 last year, the Jets' inability to move the football into the red zone and then to have the full weaponry that they had last year has kind of held them back. And even furthermore, Decker's injury, has that really hurt this offense as a whole?
Yeah, Decker's injury is a big one, obviously. He was the most targeted red zone receiver in the NFL last season. And I think he had 12 touchdowns, if I remember right. At least 10 or 11 of them were red zone touchdowns.
Yes.
So the funny part about it was going into their Monday night game last week against Arizona, the Jets were tied third in the NFL for most red zone trips.
Wow.
Through their first five games.
Okay.
They had 20 trips into the red zone in their first five games. So they were averaging 4 trips a game, which for any offense is good enough. I mean, that's not the Patriots. That's not the Steelers. That's not the really high-powered offenses in the AFC, but good enough. Last season, though, they were close to 70% red zone touchdowns, which was right also in the top three in the NFL. This year, they were 40%, including a bunch of turnovers. So whereas last year their offense was in 4 red zone trips per game, probably averaging somewhere between 17 and 24 points out of those 4 red zone trips, this year they were averaging like 8 or 10 and handing the ball back to the other team a few times. So, you know, that was where they were falling short. Yeah, they were getting to the red zone. They just weren't converting once they got there. And that's been their biggest shortfall offensively. So I would expect, even without Eric Decker, that against the Browns defense, they should move the ball. And I would think between the 20s, they'll move the ball. It's just a question of when they get to the Browns 15-yard line. Are they kicking field goals? Are they throwing a pick at the goal line? Or are they taking 4 red zone trips and turning that into 3 touchdowns, which that's what they did last year?
When you look at this team and you look at today's NFL, one thing that is prominent in the vast majority of the league, and certainly if you look in their division where the Patriots have Gronk and Bennett, it's the tight end. It is non-existent. 3 catches for 26 yards from the Jets tight ends this year. Is that a scheme thing? Is that a personnel thing? What's kind of happening with the lack of involvement from that position?
Well, they did pick up Austin Seferian Jenkins, who had a few catches against the Steelers and got a high ankle sprain, so he's been gone the last 2 weeks, and I don't have high hopes that he'll play on Sunday. They spent the second-round draft choice on Jason Morrow 3 years ago, and he, for them, was a total bust. So, no, that's not a scheme thing. That's a personnel thing. They just don't have tight ends that can separate and make plays. So they have basically turned their tight ends into blocking weapons in the run game and also sometimes taking the tight end and flexing them back at fullback. But, yeah, that's nothing new for them, unfortunately.
I know, they've been looking for forever with Cumberland, et cetera.
Yeah, last year they had, I'm not sure of the exact number. It was somewhere in the 60s. There were like 65 individual tight ends last year in the NFL had more catches than all the Jet tight ends put together. So they have not used the tight end because they haven't had a tight end that they could use as a reliable weapon in some prevent them from moving the ball.
Sure. And something. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I said one thing that's kind of hidden in there scheme-wise is Quincy Enunwa.
Yes.
He has developed into a really nice kind of hybrid H-back slot receiver type player. And so a lot of the routes, a lot of the matchups that other teams have where they're looking to get their tight end isolated on a safety or to leverage a nickel back, they're using Quincy Enunwa in that role. So on the roster, he lists as a wide receiver. And he really is. I mean, he is a wide receiver. But he has the size of like a smaller H-back NFL tight end. So, you know, the production is probably hidden in there a little bit just in the terminology of how you list him as a player. But having said that, no, they do not take tight ends and flex them out. They do not have tight ends that are going to run the seam and stretch a defense and leverage a safety. That's just not what they have.
Sure, and the one thing that you may not have is Nick Mangold, All-Pro, Pro Bowl center, who's been there, you know, over a decade, a former teammate of mine at Ohio State, and how big of a factor is going to be missing him, and then also the ability to get the touches to Matt Forte in your 2 victories. He's gone over 100 yards, and obviously, you know, minimal touches in a lot of the losses the Jets do have.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately for Matt, in some of those losses, the score got lopsided. So if he doesn't run it well early and all of a sudden you're down 3 touchdowns, that changes your game plan.
Right.
Not having Nick is big. He's missed 4 games in 10 years. Now, Wesley Johnson did well last week relieving Nick. But, you know, Nick is also, and you know from being around him, he's a computer. He's just a different kind of guy. You know, he's got a wine cellar and he speaks like your accountant. You know, I mean, he's a different mind in there. And so in terms of calling out all of those checks, I mean, I think one of the most misunderstood things, or probably just not understood things from fans and media about football, is how much communication is taking place that has nothing to do with the quarterback down in the tackle box and how much is on the center to call out protections and to communicate to the rest of the offensive line what he sees coming. So even just physically not having Nick Mangold there is a big deal. You know, the mental game, you know, the adjustment game, the audible game that the center plays that role. You know, he's a bedrock where that's concerned as well. So, yeah, if he can't go, it's a big loss. But he's got a bad ankle. He got rolled up on last week. And obviously in the NFL, if you can't get that kind of drive and leverage, because the minute you plant on your ankle, there's just severe pain. And, you're no good to anybody. You know, he's a lumberjack. I mean, he usually, you know, goes out there even hurt and gives it. I mean, you know, you obviously have to know how to play hurt to only miss 4 games in 10 years as a center in the NFL. But I, you know, if he is saying or if they are saying that it doesn't look good for him to play, he must really, really be hurt.
Yeah, officially listed as doubtful by the Jets for this one. Talking with Bob Wischus and the voice of the Jets. And, Bob, let's go to the defensive side of the ball for this team, and let's start with the guy that's supposed to be the star but looks like he's lost a step or two, Darrell Revis. What's the talk about his play this year?
Well, you know, I think the realization that he has come to and that they're coming to as well is he's not the number one cornerback in the NFL, and there isn't even a number two. You know, that he, but I mean, at some point, Father Time catches up.
Sure.
You know, he's
undefeated.
He's admitted it, that his body's kind of broken down. But he used to be the corner where you could go up against Calvin Johnson, Andre Johnson, A.J. Green. I mean, you name the number one wide receiver for the opposition and take him in a zero coverage and say, just erase that guy. And he would take a guy that caught 10 balls for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns the week before and hold him to 2 catches for 14 yards and never have that player be a factor. He can't do that anymore. Now, how many guys in the NFL could or would do that?
Not many.
Like Patrick Peterson, Richard Sherman, the other guys that like to say that they are the best corner in the NFL. And there's some other great corners, Josh Norman in the NFL. I don't think any of those guys ever played total zero coverage man-to-man against the best wide receiver in the NFL for 7 years and just erased that player. So the standard that Revis is kind of being held to, has he dropped off from that? Yes. But that still means that he's a top 15 corner.
Definitely.
It just means that he might have to erase the second best wide receiver in man-to-man coverage. He may need safety help over the top occasionally if he's playing against the best receiver that the other team has. That's all. So, I mean, is he still a very, very effective player? Yes. He is still a player that any defensive coordinator would want out there as a part of his group. You just have to deploy him and the rest of your guys a little bit differently. So now that free safety, that when he was playing with the Darrell Revis of 2008, could just go with carte blanche wherever he wanted to go on the field and
sure.
get nosy and dive into the backfield and try and make a big play or jump a route and take a chance because he knew, you know, that he didn't have to help Darrell Revis guard Calvin Johnson. Well, you know, now you can't deploy that free safety the same way that you did, you know, 8-10 years ago.
Yep, absolutely. And Dave, one quick question from me, and it's a little off topic of the Browns Jets. We know you've got the call of the Michigan State game tomorrow. Just walk me through the Big Ten in your eyes, and I think, and I'll talk about the game. How good is Michigan, and you know, in setting up for what should be a very interesting November, I believe, 26th, that third week when they match up with the Buckeyes at the Horseshoe. What has happened to Michigan State? And then do you think the Buckeyes are obviously going to continue to run the table and create the matchup I just talked about late November?
Yeah, I think Ohio State has enough difference makers on both sides of the ball that I would be surprised if they didn't win the rest of their games and make the Michigan game what we think it would be. I do think that Michigan will also run the table between now and then, and I think that Michigan-Ohio State is still going to mean everything that we figured it probably would have meant a month ago.
Yeah, me too.
You know, Michigan State, I think they're shocked to a certain extent that they are where they are. I don't think that they thought they could just overcome losing 3 NFL players on their defensive line, a 3-year starter, a quarterback to the NFL.
Jack Coughlin,
you know,
a tackle.
Big Ten wide receiver of the year.
Yeah.
That you could lose all of that and still be a top 5 team. But I don't think they ever imagined that they were going to be a team that would go from 8th in the poll after a win against Notre Dame to, you know, disappearing from the top 25 and losing 5 straight games. I don't think they ever imagine. You know, their seniors this year, this senior class, is just not performing the way other senior classes have. Now, having said that, this senior class also realizes that if they want to make their mark on this college football season,
they've got
2 more chances to do it.
Sure.
It's tomorrow, and then they play Ohio State
at home. Yes, they do.
In 3 weeks. So, you know, the Michigan State team that, I mean, these seniors have been a part of a lot of winning. You know, they are 2-5 this season. This group was 40-5 in their previous 45 games before going 2-5 in their first 7 games this year. They've lost as many games in these 7 weeks as they did the last 3 years.
Wow.
So they're, you know, they are prideful, and they know that this is a team that is going to come in here. And the seniors, conversely, for Michigan, Michigan has 9 senior starters on offense and 10 senior starters on defense. It's the most experienced team in college football, and these seniors have never beaten Michigan State. So this group is going to come in here tomorrow, I think, with the, you know, we are coming to take your soul. I mean, I think that's the, you know, that's the physical mentality, especially of the Michigan defense. Now, the Michigan defense, to be fair, the jury's still out a bit. I mean, how good are they? You know, who have they beaten? They beat Wisconsin. Okay. I mean, look at the other teams that they have racked up mind-numbing numbers. You know, 13% on third down, which is like 7% better than second place in the country. Like, nobody else is even like sub 20%. They've given up 13% of their third downs. Opponents have been in the red zone against the Michigan defense six times the entire season. So
wow.
Their defensive numbers are off the charts, but they've played Rutgers, and they've played Illinois, and they've played Penn State and Colorado, who actually moved the ball against them a bit. They played Hawaii, you know, like they played Wisconsin. And Wisconsin, it was a tooth and nail, you know, 14-7 kind of game. So I think the Michigan State guys, who have done a lot of winning and still have some belief that they've got good players, are looking at Michigan but also looking at who they've played and are saying, all right, well, they're coming to our place tomorrow, and, you know, our season basically hangs in the balance of whether or not we can win a game like this and maybe still have a chance to go to a bowl game. So I think there'll be a lot of pride out there for Michigan State. I just don't know that they have the difference makers that are all now in the NFL that they had last year to win. That'll be a really tall order.
It certainly will be. Do you think Michigan has what it takes? And I know that nobody would have thought Ohio State would have lost to Penn State, but do you think Michigan has what it takes to beat the Buckeyes in what is likely to be the ultimate or penultimate game of the Big Ten this year?
Yeah, I mean, I do. If I put the two teams, put the tape on, stack them up team against team, I think that, you know, if you were to line up both rosters, I think you would draft a fair number of Ohio State players
yeah.
in that mix. I mean, I do think that the teams are very evenly matched. I might even give a slight edge to Ohio State talent-wise, but I think that Michigan is playing right now with a mentality that's just different. It's just different level. It's very Jim Harbaugh-esque. You know, they are a violent, collision you, get in your face and try and take your manhood kind of a team right now. And that's on both sides of the ball.
But wasn't that same mentality being created last year? They just didn't have all the weapons? Because I thought the same thing of that football team last year until they ran into the buzzsaw, which was the Buckeyes last year.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And that's the hill that they have to climb. And
sure.
that's the challenge that they have to prove themselves against. Because they're going to get that challenge.
Yes, they are.
Coming. In a month, they're gonna see them.
Can't wait.
They're gonna see them on the road too. So it's I think that everything that we would think would be riding on that game will be riding on it when the team comes. But you know, these are all the same players. I mean, these are all seniors that were all juniors playing last year. They didn't really lose too much from last year's team to this year's team. They have a quarterback that's different, but other than that, I mean, where is the big change? Like I said, there's out of their top 11 on offense and defense, they've got basically 20 senior starters out of their 22 starters. It's all the same. And a lot of 5th-year seniors. I mean, it's guys that have basically been preparing for this kind of if not now, when moment, because they're all gone after this year. I mean, even, like a Jabril Peppers, who
right.
might be their most talented explosive player, he's a junior. He can leave. So, and he'll probably be projected as a top 15 pick in the NFL draft with all the different things that he can do, certainly a first-round pick. So all of these guys might be gone in, 4 months. They're all going to be in scouting combine training. So, I mean, this is their chance, and I think they're playing with that mentality, that's been driven into them. You know, guys, this is your chance to have a special season and be a special team. In, a few months from now, all of you are going to go your separate ways. We're not going to see you again.
Yeah, and this is the chance for those guys. All right, Bob, let's bring it back to the Browns and the Jets. What happens on Sunday?
Oh, I know the Jets are, they see on the tape that the Browns have come a lot closer than an 0-7 record would lead you to believe. And I don't think anybody thinks that. I know the Browns have a lot of shortcomings, and I know quarterback has been just a revolving door. But having said that, I don't think anyone believes the Browns are 0-16. At the end of the season. They're going to beat someone, and they might beat a few teams. So the Jets are very wary of this game. I think they win it as long as they don't turn the ball over, but they have been last in the NFL in the giveaway-takeaway ratio pretty much the entire season. So to me, that's the difference in the game. If the Browns find a way to force the Jets into a couple of giveaways, then they absolutely can win the game. But I think if the Jets play clean, I think they are the better team. But them playing clean this season has been anything from a given. So if you tell me they don't turn the ball over, I would say the Jets probably win a game that's in the low 20s scoring wise. But you know, we'll see if that's something that they can execute.
All right. Thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it, Bob, and we'll see you on Sunday.
Okay, guys.
All right. When we come back, final thoughts wrapping it up here on Cleveland Browns Daily before the Browns and the Jets at First Energy Stadium.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, the one game, there are three games we haven't picked.
I like the Browns.
First of all, Westlake Demons.
Come on. We win, we're in. Playoffs,
win,
baby. Let's go.
And in. All right, Browns, Jets. Let's go, Browns. I got the Browns winning 21-17.
I'm going to go 20-17.
Okay.
Less scoring.
All right. Yeah, let's. it would be way different there. All right, I want to thank Bob Wischus and Dane Brugler for being with us as well.
Matt Fontana for producing Matt such Fontana. An amazing show.
Mason Wilhelm for hanging out in the studio.
The bro, he's in the house.
The bro. There he is, looking at a big smile on his face. Yeah, boy. All right, let's go Browns. The 86 celebration, the Browns and the Jets this Sunday, First Energy Stadium. We will see you there. Go Browns. Thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850 WKNR Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.